J.T. Crowley is Talking Books. On the show, you'll hear from emerging talent and seasoned veterans from around the world.
Hello, everyone. I'm J.T. Crowley, and I warmly welcome my show today, Neil Noble from Baltimore in Maryland in the United States, to talk about his book of poem, Moods of a Lake, and Selected Poems. It's a book of 45 freestanding poems. The poems span Neil's life in chronological order. They're a kind of snapshot view, an in-the-moment series of events and circumstances that have touched Neil's life. In this book, the poems are offset by illustrations done by Jingfang Wang. Now for Neil, informs me that he accompanies music to many of his poems. And when I first heard that, I thought, wow, that's original. And I was also thinking, oh, how unfortunate we can't put the music to the poems on this podcast. So you're just going to have the verbal version, everybody. So I would like to welcome Neil onto the show. Neil, come and join me.
Thank you for the invitation. Good afternoon to you, sir. Hope you're well.
I'm very well. Now, everybody, I'm just going to tell you a little story here before I go any further. This is the second time that me and Neil have tried to do this. So we hope it's going to work this time, but be a lot clearer. Nothing like the second go. So Neil, come and join me, as you've done. And I was absolutely so excited to have read your poems. Now,
thank you.
Before we open the book of poetry, Neil, could you tell the audience who you are and why you wrote this book of poems?
Who am I? I guess I've been trying to figure that out for 76 years. I grew up in and around Washington, D.C. Most of my life, I've been involved in some phase of construction industry. I'm married now, nearly 44 years. The first one only lasted 6 years. I am a Scottish Rite Mason, very proud of that. I've been writing poetry most of my life, and then usually accompanied by my own original music. Late 2017, my father passed away. I visited him a couple of months prior, and first time in my life, he finally got around to asking me, how come you've never published any of your poetry? And frankly, I was shocked to hear that. This book came out in March of the following year. When my sister and I were going through his condo, she discovered in a cabinet drawer, file cabinet drawer, a file with every single one of my poems in it. I never knew he was even collecting them, let alone paying attention to them. In any case, like I said, a few months after his passing, I self-published this first book. I am working on another book of poems. I have a edited manuscript for a novella, looking for a agent or publishing house. I am also currently working on a animated Christmas movie with another gentleman. So I keep myself occupied.
You sure do. Now, as I said, everyone, this book has 45 poems, and we're not going to delve into all the 45 poems because we'd probably be here for a year and a day. And that's not the idea of the podcast. The idea is that we give you a sample of the poems so that you can formulate your own ideas and go and have a look at his work on his web pages and his publishings, and have a look on these Amazon link for the book. So Neil and I have been working over the last few weeks to build this podcast together, and we've chosen 10 poems for you. Now, Neil's going to read some of them, and I'm going to read the others. And at the end of each poem, I'm going to ask Neil to explain, what is that poem about? Now, Neil, I think the first poem that we should go to is Moods of a Lake, because that's the title of the book. So would you like to read that one for us and then tell us why did you write it?
Yes, thank you very much. Moods of a Lake. Dawn reveals many misty veils as I pass a pond near the road. There I see a crowd before me. Every time I drive by, I slowed. Like any crowd drawn anywhere, I want to see what they see. While the first rays still highlight the mist, while there's yet striking company. Alive in the sunrise around us, I want to feel all that they feel. Aware their day is quickly done, aware only now are they real. Standing together yet apart, I want to know all they know. What inner strength can sustain them while elements plot their growth to slow? With waning moments upon us, I've not yet fulfilled my fate. As the later this day becomes, the more time I learn to hate. I pass a pond beside the road. Never is it seen the same twice. Dawn reveals many misty veils. By dusk, memory must suffice. The inspiration for the poem is when I used to be a working man, I commuted between cities for my jobs, generally about 45 minutes each way. Early one morning, I was in the construction business, as I mentioned, so I was up early, out early. Driving the back roads, I finally discovered a man-made pond in somebody's yard. Because it was a chilly morning and the water was much, much warmer, there was a mist hanging over the pond. Well, in my mind, in my dream world mind, this could have just as easily have been a group of people standing around chatting. That's why there's references to both people and mist.
There you go, everyone. And of course, sometimes, you know, if you do pass the lake, particularly in the morning, you know, you've got the dew mist on it, it has its own mystique magic. That's what I find. Now, I'm going to read the first poem, and that is None Mightier Than Me. And this poem was written in 1969. So as we go along the poems, the date gets nearer and nearer to where we are now. So this one was written in 1969, None Mightier Than Me. There are none mightier than me. Animals live longer and may stronger be. But like us, they can't be free, because they're afraid of each other, you see. There are none mightier than me. Nature's more beautiful and taller than we. But, like us, extinction is its destiny, because it grows over each other, you see. There are none mightier than me. Religion fills in gaps and even gives us the key. But there are none so blind as those who just will not see. But must this be our destiny? There could be none mightier than we. All of us can live together in harmony. When love, trust, and peace are the new trinity, then there'll be none mightier than we. Now, I understand, Neil, that this is about humans using up the planet's natural resources as fast as we can. Am I right?
Quite. Again, just me daydreaming. We are indeed using up our natural resources much, much faster than they can recreate themselves. Everything we do is about today. Nothing we do has anything to do with tomorrow.
Okay, now let's move on to the next poem. And Neil's going to read this. And the poem is Dreamer. And I understand, Neil, that you put this one together. You know, you were sitting in an unemployment office watching and studying everyone else wrapped up in their own works. I think I'm right in saying that, aren't I?
I beg your pardon.
I think I'm right in saying that.
Yes.
You
Yes.
want to read it for us?
Please. Thank you. Sitting amidst many people in an empty room, with my mind full of thoughts about nothing new, I dream of a time when the world doesn't gently snatch us from the womb, when there is brotherhood between the Catholic, Protestant, Arab, and Jew. Listening to a voice that comes from nowhere, hearing all the lies told to us by those who say they care. I dream of a time when the world doesn't gently snatch us from the womb, and fear releases its grip on us, and soon we forget our impending doom. Watching the busy people around me, as if in a tomb, suddenly the silence says, "Haven't I met you?" I dream of a time when the world doesn't gently snatch us from the womb, when men of all colors can share peace with all their brothers too. And that's quite correct. As far as sitting in an unemployment office here in the States, what used to be once a week, go into an office, nearest office, and while we're standing in line or sitting waiting to talk to somebody, everybody is just daydreaming. Everyone is off in their own little world. Fast forward 50 plus years to today. I still see the same thing everywhere. Except now everybody's looking at their cell phones instead.
And that's just exactly what I'm doing at the moment, everybody. Because I know in America you say cell phones. Here in the UK we say mobile phones. And the reason why I'm looking at mine is not because I'm ignoring Neil at all. It's because I've got the poems on my phone, so I'm reading them from the phone. And it's my turn to read the next one, and it's working. December 1970. I'd rather sit here watching the snow. Falling, drifting, whirling, though. I've work to finish, now overdue. I can't pass up the chance to view nature's petticoats so near. But as I sit, I see, I hear unfortunate things, and I'm afraid. Beauty is now something man-made. Our direction is off. We have strayed. What we are doing is to trade. Sensual gains for a career. And as I leave, I blink, I smile, I shake my weary head. For while I know what I must do, my dread is my choice, and it resounds resolute as my dirk. I must get back to work. My freedom of choice is perfectly clear. Why did you write this one?
May sound a little confusing, but I was sitting in a college library one afternoon trying to research a perm paper. I also made the mistake of staring out the window at the snowfall, and of course I started dreaming. And it occurred to me that today our society seems to drive towards wealth and power. I don't consider that substantial. It's just the way things are now.
An interesting viewpoint. Now, Neil, would you care to read the poem Secrets? Now, I understand that this is all about atomic warfare. And you asking, who are we and what will we have, what will we leave behind to our descendants?
The secret of the atom took years to find. Its limits will soon be known. But will the discovery of all this allow our children to become grown? Many years from now, many miles away, someone will learn of our planet Earth. For man to call the dinosaur unsuccessful was the height of pretension and mirth. Finding out its secret took a lot of time. Some say midnight's only 2 minutes away. Was man a bit too clever for his own good? Let's keep the sun shining as brightly tomorrow as it did today. Perhaps the problem lies in this old man who just can't decide what he is to be, the reprobate ape or apprentice angel. The choice is ours, destiny or harmony. The secret of the atom will soon be known. That time is near at hand. But will the very discovery of all this result in the destruction of man?
So what was your thinking behind writing this one, apart from, you know, talking about the atomic warfare?
Who are we? What will we leave behind for our descendants? Exactly the same thing you said. I worry about things that I have absolutely no control over, but they're there. And while I will not be around to find out the end results, certainly my progeny will be. It's going to be their problem.
Yes, and I think many of us think that. And we just all pray and hope it doesn't come to that. Now, I'm going to read the next book, and it's called Hurt, Everyone. And it's April 1973. So we've moved on from 1969. We're now in 1973 in Neil's life. And this one is about a broken relationship, everybody. Hurt. Hurt is an injury that won't go away. It remains in your heart from day until day. This kind of cut is the unkindest of all. Besides being hurt, it can create a wall. So thick, so high, so hard to overcome. So to do so constantly makes it burdensome. My sadness grows at the thought of losing you. My thoughts get backed up and I am tongue-tied too. These foolish few lines from the mind of my heart speak of a heaviness that's hard to impart. I don't know what to do. What else can I say? I try not to hurt, but I get in my way. There's a history behind this one, isn't there?
Indeed. I have a checkered past. But then again, isn't that how we all learn from our mistakes? Yet again, I had broken off a relationship with a woman friend. At least this time, my actions and reactions had some sense of logic about them. I have a tendency to think things through after I've said or done something stupid. This time was no exception.
I think we blokes are good in that, you know, good doing that. Shoot first and then think later.
Yeah, sad to say, but yes.
We have to admit to that one. Now, Neil, let's take everybody to the poem Love Lost. And this one, which is about your ex-wife, who you met and married in 6 weeks, and to the sixth anniversary, you broke it up. Would you care to read us and tell us all about it?
Once a time ago, we did meet. Once a time ago, two strangers did entreat. We spent some time talking, looking and longing, and later spent more in the course of love's longing, love's calling. Yet what I heard, I enjoyed just as much as sharing with you that most intimate touch. Beyond yourself, you showed some of your soul. You offered but a glimpse through a mere peephole. I was content with that glimpse now and then to reveal oneself from involves obligation. This bond in between is what binds our hearts. As time goes on, we must this impart. One must give only as one can. Giving doesn't mean giving up, this understand. Love is lost easier than gained. To neglect or ignore can both be a bane. If something was there, but now is gone, beware of being used like a pawn. Last but not least, in the loss of love, is when nothing was there, and you thought there was. Yet all of these pitfalls we can eschew by journeying down a different avenue. Communication is the street of which I speak. This two-way road is not for the meek. Yes, indeed, it's about my ex-wife, although I wrote this earlier in our marriage. Yes, something stupid, getting married in 6 weeks. I thought it poignant, tells them to leave her on our anniversary date. It wasn't just breaking up. I literally rented a truck, packed up my stuff, and drove back across country. At this point, she and I were living in San Francisco. So San Francisco is a community property state. Whatever you bring into a marriage, you do get to keep. What is bought within the marriage must be split somehow. So she went off to work one morning. I backed the truck up to the apartment building, packed up my stuff, and drove back across country. And let's see, that was 1978. Let's see. I don't believe I've seen or heard from her since. The one good thing about this is a song that will forever be close to my heart. Tony Bennett sang it. I left my wife in San Francisco.
Yes, and there is a song. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to read the next poem, everybody, and it's What Do I Know? And we're now in January 1983. What I know of love, I've put into song. I speak not of advice. I may be wrong. I write what I know to be true for me. Perhaps my pain will set others free. Since long past love's been the janus of my pain, even knowing that I still can't refrain from looking for love at most any cost. You see, life without love is a life lost. Something must happen when two people meet. Some unknown force is at work when they greet. Thus is ignited a spark of desire. Whether real or not, it still starts a fire that can burn and rage way out of control. This flame of love can lead to a hole or the highest heights one can imagine when both of us are open and genuine. Yet all it would take to dampen this fire is for someone to be caught in the mire of playing out love in one of our four ways. The key could be just the turn a phrase. All it might take is a few thoughtless words. A truly deep love with nothing infer. It's the dying embers of what once was that bears the burnt of what one says or does. Please recall this is what I know to be. You have a chance in listening to me. That's why my advice is always free. Either way, it can still be agony. But life without love is a life lost, you see. Life without love is a lost, you see. I think it's a beautiful poem.
Thank you. It's not always about losing love. This, for instance, is the anticipation of such a love. But there is some unknown force at work when two people meet. This happens to be what is true for me. Perhaps my pain will help set others free.
When I listened to you there, I was thinking there's some interesting philosophy lines there. I'm thinking, yeah. But if you want to know more about Neil's his thinkings, get the book, everyone. It's really good. Now, I would like you to read, Neil, the next poem, Day Has Ended. Now, you say you thought this up as you slept one night and that you do not consider yourself above others nor any kind of soothsayer. Now, I like this poem, so I want you to read it, please, and then tell us why you wrote it.
Thank you. Sabbath has ended. Onward comes night. The darkness falls, replacing the light. My pillow beguiles the bed enchants. Too tired to argue, I am entranced. At peace with the world and all within, I dream a dream that we are all kin. But this dream of mine is not to be. My people abound in agony. Clouds billow forth as they ride the breeze. They glide o'er the earth, so at ease. My moon's obscured by these greedy clouds. They hang in the heavens like a shroud. They bring on all sorts of fits and starts. The end result has broken my heart. Must I clean my slate and start again? Has everything I've done been in vain? My ire must be soothed should I return. I think of my teachings they did spurn. I've given what I can give for now. They must learn the rest, or else, somehow. This has always puzzled me, too. The way I wrote the poem is as if God was speaking to us. That's why I made a point of saying I really don't consider myself better than anybody else or even a soothsayer. That's simply how it came about. Yes, it came to me one night in a dream. It just so happens that many poets that I'm aware of actually keep a pencil and paper on the nightstand beside them. Whether it's in the middle of the night or first thing when they wake up, they scribble notes on the pad and then are surprised by what's written the next morning, the following morning. This is what there was. So I cleaned it up a bit and published it.
I think most authors have a notepad by their bed and they wake up in the middle of the night with an idea and they scribble it down. And then when they wake up in the morning thinking, what's that about?
Yes. Yes.
So
yes,
I'm going to take you now to December. Sorry, I'm going to take you to 2016, everybody, with the poem Disappointment. And this is the last poem we're going to read for you. I find myself at a loss, unsure of what to do. I think it's because the people about me haven't a bloody clue. They're not so sure what decision to make. They think too much or not at all. In the time they decide to decide life, then slows to a crawl. They're afraid to make a decision, tortured right to the bone. They cannot seem to grasp the fact their decision's not etched in stone. The problem with this problem is the double-edged blade of thought. Too much turns your brain to stone, too little it turns to naught. Don't waste your time on details. Just do what you need to do. Because everyone else about you is doing the same thing too. All these many people create a confounding wall. All these many people slow the world to a confounding crawl. And all these many people make my head pound in pain. Because all these many people keep doing this again and again. Trying to deal with my anger from all the boobs that abound. I see myself as a drop in the ocean with no anchor in solid ground. So that, in a nutshell, is my problem. And perhaps the problem is just mine. I shouldn't expect others to think like me. So all of this, I simply opine. Wonderful, isn't it?
It is. The poem is pretty much about driving around in the city of Baltimore. The county, as we call it in the States, the city itself is so big, it is a county unto itself. For a time, I was a delivery driver, delivering auto parts to garages and whatnot. So I literally drove all over the city and the surrounding counties. And being on the road 8 hours a day, I see the traffic. I see all the boobs that abound trying to decide if this is the right turn, if they should drive on to the next street. It's ridiculous. And I know this is not unique to Baltimore. I've driven around London. I know what the traffic like is there. I've driven around parts and pieces of Ireland and Scotland and even Paris. So there is a certain commonality with drivers, frustrated drivers all about the world.
Oh, yes, I've driven around Dublin and London. I know what Neil's talking about. Neil, so that we've had a look at the book of poems here. We've given people a sample of what your poetry is about. Now, I know you've written lots more poems, so is there another book coming out? Or are you going to do some films? Or what are you going to do? Please tell us.
I do have enough poetry for another book. As you mentioned at the opening, quite a few of these poems do have accompanying illustrations. They're there intentionally to help the reader visualize the words I wrote. I'm looking for another artist to help with these. With the illustrations, I'm looking again for an agent or a publishing house specializing in poetry. Yes, I have every intention of publishing another book of poetry. And I have a novella to get out there somewhere. The novella is actually based on part of the philosophy of Buddhism. It's the philosophy is the Noble Eightfold Path to Righteousness. So, yes, I read a lot, I study a lot.
So we've got more coming down the line, everybody, and hopefully Neil will give me the opportunity to interview himself again. Now,
I would
Neil,
like that very much.
I would like that much too, even though we've done this one twice. That's another story, everyone. Neil, who would you like, to read your poems? Everybody or young people? Do you normally write for? Do you think women would read your poems more or men? Who?
I think the poetry is sufficiently diverse to interest everybody at some point. Let's see. I've written a poem about revenge simply because of the reason behind my first divorce. I've written, I don't know if you call it science fiction poetry. It's about a sentient automobile that doesn't like the way the owner is treating her. So she packs up and drives off. And then he finally realizes how much he needs her. It's a pickup truck that I'm talking about. So I am not encumbered by any particular genre or style. Dear me, what else? What else can I tell you? Honestly, it's a little bit of everything. I write a lot of poetry about death. Unfortunately, I am the oldest in my family. So all of my forebears, I can only remember. I can't visit them anymore. So it's just a little bit of everything.
There you go, everyone. Neil, where can people get your books from?
Two primary sources, of course, is Amazon. They sell both this book of poetry. Oh, and I forgot to mention, there are two anthologies that I was accepted into, one for poetry and one for short stories. Both of them were published by Author World Connect. You can look up the publisher and you'll see the books there. Oh, dear me. I'm sorry, John. I forgot just to ask me.
I'll fill in for me here. You can go on Amazon, everybody. You can go on Barnes & Noble. You can get them pretty well else. Where most
books Barnes and Noble was the other one.
Yes, I knew that. I thought, poor Neil, he's struggling here. I think I better step in here. And so you can go and have a look at the written version that accompanies this podcast, because there you'll see the link to his webpage. You'll see the link to some of the sites that he's already talked about and his novellas. And I know you'll learn a little bit more about him and what his book is about there in brief. So on the written introduction, you can click the Amazon link or you can go to his webpage and get the book there. So for the second time, Neil Noble, I would like to say thank you very much for joining me on the show today. And I wish you every success with the book.
And for the second time, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
And let's hope it's not for the third.
Take care.
I'm JT Crowley. Thanks for listening wherever you're in the world. Until next time, stay safe.